The Source Podcast is brought to you by TechPont, a San Antonio company that uses cutting-edge digital technology to elevate marketing and advertising campaigns while reporting on transparent, measurable results. Their custom-built marketing strategies offer complete digital solutions and management. TechPont strives to help businesses connect with customers and effectively grow businesses. More at TechPonte.com.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Ready or not, the future is coming to San Antonio. What that future looks like depends on what we do today. There are natural forces like climate change, natural disaster, and human-made forces like federal policy related to family services, food insecurity, housing, and more. That's going to shape the future. But what we do today, preparing for the future of 2035 and beyond, is significant. What concerns do you have about what the future looks like for San Antonio? How do you think we should be preparing for it? Call in. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org and tweet at us at @tprsource. We're joined by Clem Bieseld. He's the founder of the Institute for Alternative Futures. Clem, welcome to The Source. And also with us in the studio, Lourdes Castro-Ramirez, president of the University Health System Foundation and leader of the Mayor's Housing Policy Task Force. Lourdes, welcome back to The Source.
Thank you so much.
Molly Cox is here, president and CEO of SA 2020, and Karen Baines is director of community impact for SA 2020. Welcome back. It's always great to have SA 2020 on a program.
I missed you.
Yes. So let's go over to Clem. Clem, if you're there, tell me about what the Institute for Alternative Futures is doing. What do you think are the big future shocks that San Antonio needs to be looking at?
Great, great. Well, the Institute is a group that actually Alvin Toffler wrote the book Future Shock and I and some others started. And we work with communities and organizations to promote foresight and anticipatory democracy. The report that we're talking about today, San Antonio Human Services 2035, is an example of that focused on the human service community. The Kresge Foundation asked us, the Institute, to work with human services community around the country to take human service leaders and community folks through a process of looking at challenges and opportunities and considering their vision. So we've done national scenarios and San Antonio, as well as 10 other state and local human service communities. The methods that we used were to work with the leaders in each of the communities, in this case San Antonio, to consider a variety of factors, the future of the economy, jobs, technology, values, and policies. And then put into alternative scenarios. That looked at challenging, likely or visionary scenarios. Some of the forces, as David, you mentioned at the beginning, at the top of the show, do include the economy transforming, and one of the questions will be what will happen to jobs, in that as many as 25% of jobs will disappear because of automation in the 2020s. Likewise, climate change will be significant in all communities, including San Antonio. And also, just as the internet and social media have changed how we live over the last 20 years, so moving forward over the next decade, virtual reality and artificial intelligence will shape both our daily lives and our work. On the other hand, there are opportunities in technology for low-cost energy, for home and community food production, and for local 3D printing of many of the things that we might need. Together, those changes could lower the cost of living. Simultaneously, there are value changes taking place across the country, and including the rise of equity and inclusion. When you put those together, and then for the scenarios, we considered those forces and how they might roll out, and then we did detailed looks at areas of human services, aging, behavioral health, child and family services, disability, housing, and income supports. And as I said, we put those together into different types of futures. The first was expectable or most likely. The second was challenging and considered another great recession, climate change being particularly challenging, and high job loss both to the Great Recession and to automation, but not intervening changes in policy.
Sure.
So,
because you kind of lost me. there's a lot you're talking about there, and I really want to slow it down and break it down so we can talk about not just San Antonio, but a lot of cities, because this is a problem for Texas, the nation, and the world. So first off, I want to ask, and try and hear from everyone here about, like, what exactly is a city? You know, we take that for granted. A city is a city, but, you know, a city is a lot of things. It's an economic engine. It's a built environment. It's a social organism. What makes a city a city? Why are they growing the way that they do? What makes a successful city? And what are some of the threats that could impact that? So, and how those threats are evolving, and we got to evolve with them. So really quickly, Clem, if you could kind of help me figure out, what are we talking about when we talk about a city?
What you described, it's the economy, it's the neighborhoods, it's the school systems, it's how those interact, and San Antonio's case, one of the scenarios clearly looks at the metroplex of Austin and San Antonio merging, so even the boundaries and definitions of the city can keep moving.
And Molly Cox, President and CEO of SA 2020, when you think about a city, and we're talking about these different facets of it, what are you most concerned with?
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate sort of this idea of a social organism, the idea that we are coming together as a community to really define who we are, our values moving forward. There were things that Clem said around being sort of foresight and anticipatory democracy, the idea that we as a community can also influence the way our city grows and shifts and changes, the aligning values and what that looks like. It's basically why SA 2020 exists in the first place, right? That we came together to sort of say, this is where we want to go as a community, and can we as a community wrap our arms around that and align towards it? So when we think about a city, it's not just boundaries, just as Clem was explaining, like the boundaries could potentially shift. It's also how are we using the city as a space in which we can develop relationships, social networks, understanding each other, and then sort of growing together.
Right. And it's all of these things, a economic engine, a built environment, a social organism, and more, all of these things working together, because how we operate as a social organism is going to depend upon how the city is actually built.
Yeah.
And how we operate as an economic engine, providing jobs, providing resources, providing services to individuals here, dependent upon how everything is working together as well. So when we come back from the break, I really want to hear from Lourdes Castro Ramirez about what her view is about this, how this city operates, how we can future-proof it against some of these challenges that we see coming our way and some that are already here. And our phone lines are open. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. What concerns do you have about the future of San Antonio? And we're talking about not that far away, 2035. It's already here. The number is 210-614-8980. And Clem, we got to let you go. I'm sorry we couldn't have you for the whole time. And this is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about future-proofing San Antonio. A lot of challenges on our doorstep. A lot of them are down the street. They're getting closer and closer all the time. How are we preparing for some of the future shocks that are awaiting San Antonio? Lourdes Castro Ramirez is with us, president of the University Health System Foundation and leader of the Mayor's Housing Policy Task Force, former president of the CEO of the San Antonio Housing Authority, and former president Principal Deputy Secretary in the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. So, Lourdes, you look a lot at how where people live, how they live, whether or not where they're living is actually suited to them, and the built environment of cities. What tools do cities have, and what are your concerns about preparing for the future?
Yes. First of all, I think it's really important for us as we take the long view and look at what outcomes and conditions should we expect to see, let's say, for by 2035, that we not lose sight of the history and the historical patterns of development of neighborhoods, because if we skip understanding that there is a history of redlining in our city, like all cities across the U.S., if we skip understanding the patterns of racial and residential segregation, we begin to create policies and programs that do not sort of recognize and don't correct for that. And so adopting...
So we're stuck with the legacy of bad public policy.
Exactly.
And some of that bad public policy was rooted in racism and exclusion. And some other bad public policy was determined to fuel consumerism and single-use urban sprawl type stuff.
Exactly. And so as we look to the growth of our city, as we look to accommodating about 1 million new people that will be here by 2040, it's really important for us to recognize that we have to adopt an equity approach to development. So what does that mean? That means that we have to understand, from a housing perspective, the work that we were engaged with under the Mayor's Housing Policy Task Force was really to understand the housing, the current housing challenges that our families are facing across the spectrum, from homelessness to homeownership, and then to begin to understand how are we going to ensure that in the future, as our city grows, as our elders age, as young families move into the urban core, that we are providing housing that is affordable to them and housing that is integrated into not just the fabric of the neighborhood, but that is accessible and connected to transportation and to the resources that are necessary. So from a built environment perspective, future-proofing for me and for the work around housing is about creating the conditions that are going to lead us to ensure that we have an appropriate supply of housing that is affordable for working families, for seniors that are aging in place, for intergenerational families, for individuals, for young people that are looking to move back into downtown.
So we had built a city that demanded that you had to have a car. You couldn't live on one part of San Antonio and really conveniently get to another part or go shopping without a car, right? Yes or no?
Yes, I think so.
Okay, and so so future-proofing San Antonio, does that mean trying to do something? What does the report say about that, Molly Cox?
Yeah, I mean, I think, so let's take a step back, right? And let's start really thinking about the idea that basically the Institute for Alternative Futures looked at data across the board and sort of trended it out through 2035, then said, what are the conditions that we could do? What are the things that we could do today to shift an expectable future, to prepare for a devastating future, and then to really get to a visionary future. What we found very specifically in looking at this information was, how can we as a community really begin articulating in a city that is built only for cars, I'm putting that in air quotes that no one can see, in a city that was built through redlining neighborhoods, in a city that has systems in place that make it difficult to move out of an expected or devastating future, what is San Antonio capable of doing today to shift that? And to be fair,
we are already doing that, right? So ideas like understanding our housing policy, preparing ourselves for a million new people coming in, understanding that we know we want to go somewhere differently. What we found very specifically in this report was because San Antonio 10 years ago started saying out loud, this is actually where we want to go as a community. These are the results we actually want to see. It immediately changed our expected future to visionary, even though it says expected, because we had a vision already in place. If you look at our scenarios versus the other cities that the Institute did, our scenarios are actually better than the other 10 cities that participated in this particular project.
Because we did things like the Decade of Downtown, something like that?
Because we actually created a vision, the community vision that SA 2020 drives every single day, saying, for example, we want educational opportunity no matter your zip code. We want economic prosperity no matter where you come from. We want affordable housing. We want public transit use. We want people to get out of their cars and walk more. We want to bring down our obesity rates. We want to see a healthier community. We already set ourselves up for a better future. What we have to then do is create the strategies by which we continue that trajectory.
So Karen Baines, Director of Community Impact for SA 2020, I mean, people have been doing this for a while now, trying to figure out how to reconfigure their cities to make them more walkable and bikeable. And that means slowing down traffic, putting more trees, widening sidewalks, doing a lot of the things that we're hearing all the time. People call up on the radio and say, this is what we want. Mm-hmm. So do people feel like they're getting some sort of a response from the city government? Because when we talk about the city, there's also the city government, and those are two separate things, but, you know, one depends on the other. So what's happening in that era?
Sure. What we're hearing a lot right now, and we're hearing it just so far on air right now, is the word equity. And we know that we're in a moment right now, not just in our local government, but across institutions, from foundations to corporations. We're hearing this word a lot, and it can oftentimes feel like a buzzword. What we're hearing around the Institute of Alternative Futures, what we're hearing when we're talking about the progress we're making towards our shared vision, is that equity is in fact very real. It is the strategies by which we have employed our success to reach the ways in which we have made progress towards the community vision already. We are very much saying it is the means by which we are accounting for the different, like Lourdes said, histories and needs and challenges of everyone who calls San Antonio home, and then accounting for in our budgets, in our policies, in our programs, in our service delivery, accounting for those differences, very different from equality in which we treat everyone the same. Right now, across institutions, we are building a movement, and that's what we're seeing at SA 2020 across our 150-plus multi-sector partners that are very explicitly committing to driving progress to the shared vision and maximizing their impact and being very serious about equity beyond a buzzword. This is significant in San Antonio, and what we have to be so proud of by having a shared vision, like Molly said, we are the only large city in the entire country that not only has a vision written by the folks who call San Antonio home, but also has a nonprofit organization that is responsible for holding a community, including government, accountable to reaching that vision, and then is aligning multi-sector partners.
Yeah, and that organization is SA 2020. Wasn't that long ago when people thought 2020 was the future, you know, and now, hey.
It's tomorrow, basically,
yeah.
David. That's what you're telling me.
Yeah, well, yeah, like 4 months or so.
Yeah, right.
So here we are. Mm-hmm. When SA 2020 was dawning, we were talking about the future of San Antonio.
Yeah.
Now that it's here, that process, you know, what did we get for that?
Yeah, so we're right now, right, our last impact report showed 70% of the indicators we're currently tracking doing better today than they were when we started. I think what we're also seeing is, after a decade of this work, that we're starting to have conversations that we didn't have 10 years ago, right? When we're talking about human-centered design and equitable outcomes, we're saying things like digital inclusion affect our workforce as well as, right, many other things. We are using words like climate change in a much more serious way. We're seeing job automation about to happen, virtual reality, right? trying to figure out sort of like what will occur in the next 10 years is the space in which we as a community have to start really being mindful of. What do we want to see over the next 10 years? Where do we want to go from here? So we've seen some major progress, and we've also seen that we have a lot more work to do.
So Clem Bezold said that 25% of the jobs that we have now are going to be lost to automation.
That's right.
What is the report, and what is what have you seen for how's it going to impact San Antonio?
Yeah, so the idea that we're the way in which we did education previously when you and I came out of school is different, right? There was a conversation that we had. We included A&M San Antonio, the Economic Development Foundation, even the city of San Antonio, and Lourdes was there as well. And one of the things that we were hearing very specifically from higher ed is we have to stop trying to help students get their first job. We have to start preparing them for their third jobs, right? We know that it's going to consistently shift and change. You have things like CAST schools and that system of schools coming up in San Antonio basically saying, we're preparing kids in high school now for jobs immediately out of high school so that that can help them then prepare for jobs 10, 20, 30 years from now. Because as we start to automate jobs, we're also going to be working on AR and VR and like learning all the things. We're going to have robots doing work for us that we didn't have before. They're things that we're not even like thinking about 10 years ago that we're barely thinking, we're barely cracking the nugget now. So it's really sort of thinking further along than just what's right ahead of us, which is basically the entire work that we as a community have already been doing.
Sure. And advanced manufacturing, which there's a big push in San Antonio to provide training for those jobs. And so as we talk about housing affordability, one way to deal with that is to help people afford more. You know, so they, if they have better income, then they can they meet in the middle. Houses are available that they can afford, and they're also making more money. Right, Lourdes?
Certainly. I think, you know, job, employment, economic, you know, development needs to be a continued priority for our city. But I do want to emphasize that back to the point of, you know, the community of San Antonio adopted a 10-year community vision and has been really intentional about staying connected and moving the needle in everything from health to education to human services to housing. And I think what's critical for us to understand is that that focus and that intention has enabled us to be well positioned for the next, you know, 15 to 20 years as we look at connecting these systems. And so Molly spoke about the new conversations that are beginning to occur among sectors. And one, you know, really exciting, you know, conversation and really opportunity for a more solidified partnership is around the understanding that where you live and your ability to have stable, safe, affordable housing will affect your health outcomes. So there's growing conversation between the healthcare professionals and the healthcare sector and the housing professionals to align these systems, because at the end of the day, when a patient comes to our clinic or to a hospital, we want to ensure that they're able to go to a home where they will be able to continue taking their medications or following, having really the support system to be able to do well. And that's, I think, where we're at now, beginning to look at how to align these systems really for the benefit of building our, you know, the human sort of capacity so that individuals can be more productive at work, so that children are able to do well in schools, so that we are able to spend some time building community in our own neighborhoods.
And doing all those things right creates a more attractive, comfortable city, neighborhood, place to live, surrounded by people that you know, that you interact with, that you have positive relationships exactly. with, whether it be your friends, families, neighbors, associates. So it's really about relationships. Yes. That's a big part of what makes a city, and being able to help foster that. So that's part of the future as well. And this interconnected isolation seems to be counter to that right now. So we're going to take a break. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The source continues after this.
Potential border crossers might not think they need a passport to travel to Mexico. You do, in some instances.
Especially if you're going to travel further in beyond a certain perimeter, beyond the border region in Mexico. Definitely if you're going to be taking a U.S.-registered car.
A representative from the U.S. State Department joins us on Fronteras to tell us what we need to know and what we need to take when we travel to Mexico. Download Fronteras wherever you find your favorite podcasts.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davis, talking about future-proofing San Antonio. We're working off a report produced by the Institute for Alternative Futures, and there's a lot here. And we're talking about different challenges that are coming to San Antonio. Some are already here. How can we deal with those and create the best living space possible for the people here, people who are already here? We had a mayoral candidate recently talk about disparagingly about planning for the future of San Antonio. What about the people who are already here? Well, you know, those people who are already here, they're going to be in future San Antonio as well. Sure. We're not just talking about planning for the people who are coming. Yeah. We're talking about the whole kielbasa of the people who live in the city. So Molly Cox, help me understand the report. There's a lot of data here and a lot of different ways of looking at it. So give me the easy capsule version of what I need to know.
Yeah. So let's start first with this idea that it's important for us to know where we want to go in order to create strategies and plans to get there.
Right. We just don't want to just grow a city improvisational.
Right.
Because then we have this mess.
That's exactly right. So if we're not doing something with intention, deliberately, then what we're really doing is just sort of like throwing things at the wall and saying, hope they stick, right? The fact that these scenarios, what they basically do are asking us as human beings to think about, hey, this is where we could be going as a community. And that the Institute for Alternative Futures broke it up into four scenarios. It's the idea that we know that the future is uncertain. What we can do is start to think about where the future could go. So the scenarios provide sort of different stories for our future of San Antonio. And they are broken up four ways. One is, if everything remains the same and nothing changes, this is where we could go. That's expected. If, for example, there's a recession or climate change becomes even worse than we had anticipated, or job loss is more exponential than we could have ever even imagined, we would go into a challenging future. And then there are two separate types of visionary futures. One is, oh, things are actually moving the way we want them to go. We are planning in a better way. We are making very intentional decisions about where our housing goes. City government policy is really making sure that we are thinking about our histories and also our futures. Our resources are being developed in a way that a community needs us to. For example, if we keep building freeway after freeway after freeway after freeway, then we will not get to a community that is more connected with walkable neighborhoods that allow us to get out of our cars.
Sure. The way we kind of design neighborhoods now is that this clump of houses, this neighborhood feeds, all goes into one major feeder street. And then that goes into another major feeder street. And then that goes to the highway and takes you where you want to go.
Right.
And doesn't really give you many alternatives to get to where you want to go. When there's an accident or suddenly every morning there's a tremendous traffic jam because everyone's going to the same place at the same time, mm-hmm. it's just not productive.
Right.
So if you try to build cities with away from that model, more opportunities to make your own decisions on how you want to get to where you want to go, then we avoid some of these traditional problems.
It allows us to say, why are we doing this in the first place, right? Why are we building streets the same way we always build streets if we know that we want to be more human-centered in our design because we actually want to reach a visionary future? So the intentionality behind multiple stakeholders working towards the exact same goals and saying, why do we care about streets? Well, we care about streets because we want people to be able to get safely to their jobs, their education,
population, their homes, their healthcare providers, right? Well, that changes a conversation in why do we build streets? Well, we build streets so we could put cars on them, right? Like that's how we, so right. you get in your car
so
and
go.
So
the streets get wider, sidewalks get more narrow, or they disappear entirely.
Exactly. So what happens if we think about where we want to go and then just keep asking, then why are we doing it this way? What are we ultimately trying to achieve? What are the results we want to see as a community? And how might that impact the people who live here?
So I was going through old newspapers. I saw this the other day, 1932, the SAPSCO, which was the San Antonio company that ran all the utilities and also the streetcars. They go to the San Antonio City Council and they say, okay, we're getting rid of the streetcars. We're going to go to buses. And the city council said, okay. And it was all because the city was growing beyond the reach of the streetcar system. And they just said, we're going to go to these modern buses and it's going to be awesome. And the city council said, okay. And that's how we got rid of streetcars and went to buses basically in one day in San Antonio. So these decisions can be made on a dime, but they will short-sighted and not really thinking about what the impact is going to be in the long term. And we're living with that even as we are today. So Lourdes, can you talk about, you know, policy making or a lot of pressures?
Right.
Okay, we have to talk about what's happening with us today and economic pressures, but while we look at these challenges that aren't here quite yet. So how do you balance that?
Yes, so the recommendations that were outlined in the report that Molly just walked through, specifically, one of the recommendations calls for increasing the quality and supply of low-income housing. And so from a policy perspective, when we look at housing, we have a housing policy framework that was adopted by the City Council in 2018 that lays out that for the next 10 years, we need to produce a minimum of 19,000 affordable housing units, and that begins to outline the affordability level that is required to ensure that we are taking care of our residents and our families and also accommodating for growth. And so that's a very concrete example of how the city, through policy regulations and also through bringing people to the table, to including them to be involved in sharing their perspective and being part of the policy making, that's how we will get to continuing the focus on being human-centered, but also creating policy that is responsive to the community and the people that we're serving. And that, I think, is a change in the way that our local government, for the most part, mm-hmm. operates. The realization that as the city grows and as we continue to preserve its culture, its tradition, its vitality, we need to embrace equity, and we need to also be inclusive of people, their voices, their experiences in shaping policy.
All right. And Kieran Baines, I want to see what you have to say about that.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And in fact, Lourdes is the perfect person to hear this from. When we talk about how to prepare for the future or how to future-proof, civic engagement is core to that. How are community members being engaged in processes that affect them? And specifically, how are institutions like the government making sure that there are no barriers to that participation? The Housing Policy Task Force is a brilliant example of this that was led by Lourdes and many other community leaders. And it was an effort of over 500 community members across San Antonio that were engaged in that process that ultimately led to policy changes in our local government. In understanding civic engagement and the relationship between institutions and individuals is also critical to how we begin to future-proof and how we have already future-proofed San Antonio. We know that we as individuals, we as community members who live in San Antonio, we make up the institutions. So oftentimes there's sort of a false divide between this idea of the people who are creating policy and the folks that are being served, when in fact we are serving one another, and how critical that level of understanding and perspective taking is in order to prepare for the future is critical to engage everyone in San Antonio in order to affect change.
All right. Let's go to the phone lines, 210-614-8980. David, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yes. Hi, this is David. So my question is regarding to gentrification and the future of the West Side. I think that, you know, as that happens, obviously it moves people out. And with my comment to the dialogue, I think that, you know, with example to that, if the community doesn't know how the forum is going to be conducted, it's hard for them to respond appropriately. And I think when they hold social or community outreach commentary, they have to know that sometimes it's not a forum for vocal response. You have to have written things in weeks in advance. And I think that education sometimes disenfranchises people from communicating during these events. So the gentrification of the West Side and what we see about that is my question.
All right, David, thank you for the call. And Molly Cox.
Yeah, David, thank you. Like, that's, yes.
Yes, correct.
Yes, you're exactly right. I think that we as a community have got to be better at stopping our doing unto, where we think if we hold an open forum, then the people who show up are the ones who get their voices heard, versus understanding how we would ultimately invite people to participate in their own government and in their own institutions, right? I know we're speaking very specifically about city government, but when we talk about civic engagement and we mean institutions, we're also talking about our academic institutions, our nonprofit institutions. How are we including people inside the ways in which we are creating programs? We're currently in the midst of budget season, for example, in the city of San Antonio, $2.9 billion of our public dollars being utilized to help the city deliver quality services toward, in a commitment to achieve a vision of prosperity. That's their mission, right? So how are we then engaging with our community, with our city government, in order to influence the way that that budget is going? We know that they just committed for the second year to put more money into affordable housing based on a 500-person community engagement process that said you have to put more dollars into where we live.
Right. Also, the way people use a city needs to be paid attention to by city planners.
Yeah.
And look at the way human behavior interacts with the built environment, and then harness that power to build a better, more effective, more pleasant place to live, quality of life. And make sure, hopefully, that is happening here in San Antonio. The number to call in is 210-614-8980. We're talking about future-proofing San Antonio. What future concerns do you have about our city? This continues right after the break. Stay tuned. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Future-proofing San Antonio. How do we do it? What are we future-proofing against? The number is 210-614-8980. Hondo, thanks for holding on. And Hondo, you're on the air.
Yes. First, TPR should challenge the expected future of 1 million people by 2040 and traffic always getting worse. But I'd like to say that One SA Tomorrow goal is to encourage development outside of the Edwards-Oxford recharge zone. The problem, SA Tomorrow encourages two regional growth centers over the Edwards, which is not in compliance with that policy. One question in urban planning is where not to build. How are we not dooming ourselves to a slow death by a million cuts by having two growth centers over the Edwards-Oxford?
All right, Hondo, thank you for that. And let's go to Molly Cox.
Yeah, I mean, I think, again, we're sort of, Hondo, thanks. You're going, again, specifically to how the City of San Antonio government, in their SA Tomorrow plan, is ultimately planning and developing for the future as a whole, right?
Right, and that's our big tool for the city. We have planning, we have zoning, and other type of regulations that we can put out there. Are these tools, are these policies in place? Are they aligned with where we want to go?
That's exactly right. And I think it goes back to us being better at asking things like,
why are we doing this? Does it make sense? Who then gets impacted? It brings us to that conversation right before this, when David was talking about gentrification, the idea that we're bringing people into the, how are we displacing people? What's happening on the West Side? And I think what that ultimately allows us to do when we're specifically talking about planning and our built environment, our infrastructure for San Antonio, is why are we doing the things that we're doing, and who will ultimately be impacted by it?
Sure. And progress, if it doesn't include everyone, that's not progress. Everyone has got to be coming along simultaneously. So if we're talking about building a future, future-proofing in San Antonio, and that includes, well, we're going to have to gentrify neighborhoods, well, that's not acceptable. We got to come up with other solutions. So Lourdes Castro Ramirez, can you talk about, you know, where are we with that?
Right, that's exactly right. Where we're at with, you know, understanding that, yes, our cities are dynamic and our neighborhoods are growing, but they should not grow at the expense of displacing families and individuals that have been in those neighborhoods for a very long period of time. And in the Mayor's Housing Policy Task Force, we specifically outlined a set of strategies around essentially preventing displacement, and starting with recognizing that this was happening, that gentrification and displacement was occurring throughout neighborhoods in San Antonio. Secondly, by proposing, and the city the city council adopted, the creation of a new plan called the Risk Mitigation Plan, which was a fund that is available to assist families that are in the process of being displaced. But we wanted to go further than that. We want to, we outlined a set of strategies to prevent displacement. And so there's a current effort underway that is being led by the city, along with an organization called Grounded Solutions, and with, you know, support from the Housing Commission, to develop a comprehensive anti-displacement policy to address these issues. Finally, I think, you know, the going back to the importance of engagement and civic participation, one of the really encouraging outcomes of this, you know, process that led to the creation of this comprehensive and compassionate housing policy plan was the development of new organizations that are grassroots, that are really grounded and paying attention to housing and neighborhood issues. And one of those organizations is San Antonio Housing Oversight Committee. And these are, you know, people from the neighborhood that are concerned about what is happening within their neighborhood, but also recognize that it's important to be at the table, to come with solutions, and to ensure that as the investments, you know, occur, because we do want to see investments in neighborhoods, that they're equitable and that they don't, you know, result in displacement and negative impacts in families that are already residing in those neighborhoods.
One of the really interesting things that Clem was talking about was this 3D printing innovation revolution that's coming. Mm-hmm. So Molly Cox, how do you see 3D printing being a big game changer for San Antonio?
Yeah, I mean, I think it goes back to what we were talking about earlier, where there's like things that we didn't even know existed exist, right? Or like coming out immediately, right? I don't know that 10 years ago we would say that you could bite into a burger that's not a burger that would taste like a burger but was veggie, right? Like there's things like that. But they're also talking about there are major things that are happening in 3D printing food, right? The idea that we are sort of changing the way in which technology is interfacing with us in such a drastically different way, right? The internet or the interwebs, as the hip kids call it, has literally revolutionized the way that we operate as a community today. And all of the things that are coming even further down the line are just, if imagine, right, if the internet revolutionized, what's going to happen when we can 3D print food?
Well, it's not just food. I mean, it's, I can 3D print food in my garden all the time.
Right, right. But, different.
Yeah, but 3D printing of things like components for construction material, yeah. Low-cost solar, renewable energy components, things that we need. So we kind of do away with it for warehousing of, and actually going to the store and getting certain items. How is that, and is this something that's going to be a technology that's available to to everyone. You know, how are we going to share that technology? Also, other technology, self-driving cars, we keep hearing how that's going to come.
Yeah.
And for a long time, that was being touted as going to be a positive thing, that we're going to see less traffic. And now we're seeing more and more evidence it's going to be causing more traffic because these cars are going to be zipping around on their own without people in them. How is that a good thing? So all of this innovation, this report kind of really talks about we're going to see some big changes in our society.
Yeah, it's also asking us, right, to even say some of these things out loud, right? Like we're saying, hey, you have to acknowledge climate change exists in order for us to actually prepare for what climate change could bring.
Right, and what it could bring will be more people to San Antonio because we're seeing mass migration already being caused by climate change.
That's right.
And who knows how many disasters caused by climate change on our Texas coast. What's that going to mean? And we're going to see people are saying we need to go to higher land, higher ground. And does that mean San Antonio? Are we going to be the safe space?
And the Institute for Alternative Futures report actually talks about what happens when climate change becomes such a challenge that it changes our future in a way that we are not even ready for. Well, you were talking about a little bit earlier around technology. There was this interesting sort of report that came out that said if we keep using tech, or if we keep the same people creating technology that have been creating technology, then we start to leave people out, right? So what does it look like when organizations like a Youth Code Jam, for example, or CAST Schools, that is, and CAST Tech specifically, begin putting more women or people of color into the technology space, that they begin creating technology advances to then allow for more people to use them in ways that we've never thought about? And it goes back to creating equitable conditions and processes that lead to equitable outcomes.
Yeah, so let's go back to Kira Baines on that, Director of Community Impact for SA 2020, and how do we make sure that San Antonio's future doesn't have artificial gender and racial barriers?
I have to say that Molly's point exactly is reminding me of just an experience of going through the airport. So if I go through security at the airport with my hair natural and curly, I am every single time going to be pulled to the side for extra screening in my hair. I never thought about
this. Is there a curly hairline that I don't know about?
Yeah. Yes, exactly. So, and what this research is actually showing is that the technology behind screening in airports does have a bias built in for textured hair or curly hair or the hair that is with women, for women of color in particular, or for black women more specifically. So over and over again, what we're hearing is when we design policies or budgets or services or even the very technology that we interact with every day, if we design that with the knowledge of the people who will be most impacted, those very same policies and services will be more effective and efficient, right? Because I'm getting pulled over for extra screening, it's inefficient process at the airport. So how can we do better? And it's not just the technology in our airport, but it's really every single system that we talk about that makes up our shared community vision.
And Molly Cox, this report that I've gone through, I don't see a lot of addressing some of the social disruptions that we could see in the next 10 to 15 years. You know, they talk about we're kind of now in a cold civil war. What happens? What's that look like?
Yeah, I mean, so the challenging future itself, if we were to sort of hang out in that space, speaks very specifically about the economy growing slowly for the next couple of decades, periodic recessions. There's a potential great recession of 2023 that challenges employment and tax receipts and human service spending, which then, of course, increases the amount of people who would need to go into human service organizations and ask for more help. So there are very challenging potential scenario that could lead us down a path that is not preferred, right? Which is why if we're talking about it now, we do not want that to occur. What are the things we put into place today that allow us to future-proof for tomorrow? And I think it's in this idea, and we said it a little bit earlier, the idea that everything is interconnected. If we are not thinking about housing and education and civic engagement and economic development and infrastructure and health all at the same time, that all of these impact each other, influence and are affected by each other, then we're staying in our silos. And one of the recommendations in the report is get out of your silo and start thinking about how the thing that you are doing will ultimately impact everything else.
And in 20 seconds, Lourdes Castro Ramirez, you know, are the policymakers thinking that way?
I believe that they are thinking that way. I think we have embraced the notion of looking at our policymaking through the lens of equity. And I also think that there is a commitment to greater civic engagement. And so long as we continue on that path, we will continue to make progress towards improving the quality of life for residents and the commitment to being human-centered.
All right. Lourdes Castro-Ramirez, president of the University Health System Foundation, leader of the Mayor's Housing Policy Task Force, Molly Cox, Kieran Baines of SA 2020. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies, produced by Kim Johnson and Dallas Williams, with production assistance provided by me, Ruben Garcia, and Jan Ross Piedad. Dan Katz is TPR's news director.